From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. As California goes, so goes the nation, they say. And this year, California aimed very high on combating climate change to boost renewable electricity use to 50%, to double energy efficiency in its buildings, that's a lot, and most ambitious of all, to cut its use of gasoline and diesel by half by 2030. That's only 15 years. All necessary, supporters said, to help stop catastrophic changes to the climate. But last night, under big pressure from the oil industry and more, California backed down on that huge cut in oil use. This hour on Point, California blinks on battling climate change. And what that means, you can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Was this a bridge too far, too much to ask? Could you cut that much gasoline, half, out of your life? Will we have to? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Now, California has big, big goals to cut their CO2 emissions by 80% by 2050. Lots of places have goals. If you want to get there, you've got to get started. Their start included cutting gas and diesel use by half by 2030. That's a lot in a hurry. Here was California Governor Jerry Brown in July in Los Angeles, CBS Los Angeles, saying, got to do it.
We got a serious problem here. And burning oil and gas and coal and diesel is a big part of the problem. We've got to find new biofuels. We have to be more efficient. We've got a lot to do. And by the way, if we do nothing, the cost is unimaginable.
Then came the oil lobby and Democrats who were concerned about the economies of their regions of the state. But here's an ad from the California Drivers Alliance, Reed Oil, pushing back against the California bill that would have, until last night, cut the use of gasoline and diesel in the state by 50% over the next 15 years.
If you can afford a Tesla, then this message won't really matter to you. But the California Gas Restriction Act of 2015 will restrict the use of gas and diesel in California by 50% over the next 15 years. Some say it's about state regulators limiting how far we can drive by rationing gas, increasing costs, or penalizing drivers for using too much gas. But really, it's about making it harder for regular people to drive to work and drive home each day.
Those ads were all over the place. That name given to the bill, California Gas Restriction Act of 2015, not the name of the bill. But they won. Last night, California blinked. Jerry Brown said the battle goes on and they'll ultimately win it. They'll ultimately win it. But oil won this one. Here's the governor last night.
Oil has won a skirmish, but they've lost the bigger battle because I am more determined than ever to make our regulatory regime work for the people of California, cleaning up the air, reducing the petroleum, and creating the green jobs that are going to put hundreds of thousands of people to work over the coming decades.
Okay, but what are we in the middle of? A titanic struggle, said the governor.
Make no mistake about it. This is a titanic struggle that will go on for years and decades. But at the end, science, the religious leadership of the world, ordinary people will triumph.
We'll see. California blinked last night. With us first today from Sacramento, California's Chris McGeerian, reporter for the Los Angeles Times, covers the climate change legislation, has been all over this story. He was at the press conference last night where California backed down on this one, this piece of the plan. Chris McGeerian, thank you so much for joining us.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
Now, I know this was only one of three prongs, but it was a big deal. It got a lot of attention. Of course, whatever California does has a big effect on the whole country, maybe the world. What is it that led the leadership in the state assembly there ultimately to back down on this?
Opposition was so fierce from the oil companies, and there were so many doubts about whether or not California could actually hit this target, that Assembly Democrats weren't willing to make the jump and support this goal. There was fierce lobbying from the oil industry. They wanted to kill this very badly, and it just wasn't going to pass the Assembly.
How were they thinking that they would do it? That's just a gigantic cut in California, as we know, is a car culture. What were the steps that were laid out or contemplated that could let them cut gas and diesel use by 50% in just 15 years?
Right. And it sounds like a huge amount, especially in a place that loves its cars as much as California does. But what they were saying is that you can basically work around the edges to kind of wheedle away how much petroleum is used in California. For example, you change the formula for gasoline and put less carbon in the gasoline.
What instead? You mean biofuels instead?
Yep, you can splice it with biofuels and other things like that, kind of like a cocktail almost. And then you can also change planning rules for new apartment complexes and other new developments. So all of a sudden, you know, buildings are being built right next to train stations rather than along highways. So they're saying that all these small changes can add up to a really big shift in how we use oil.
Small changes, but rebuilding so that you're next to public transit or highways, that's a pretty big deal in itself. Changing the formula, biofuels, we know those have big implications. Oil industry pushed back very, very hard here, but it wasn't just them. Of course, the original deal, the 80% cut that is still the goal by 2050, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Republican, was in on. But you had Democrats who were also pushing against this cut to gas and diesel use. I've got a little tape here, Chris, of Assemblyman Adam Gray, represents communities in the Central Valley, said he was against it. He talked with KPCC before the vote yesterday. SB 350 was the bill there, saying that agriculture was the big driver in his community and his community would be hurt.
More than anywhere else in California, this would mean reducing jobs and businesses and opportunities. We grow food, produce, and manufacture. Obviously, we truck that food to ports and send it all over the world. So there's a lot of potential loss, a lot of industry loss, a lot of job loss for our community.
How strong was Democratic Party pushback on this piece of the climate change legislation, Chris?
It was very strong, and it reflects a divide within the Democratic Party in California. You have some Democrats who really want to put the environment first, and then you have other Democrats, just like you heard Adam Gray said, that really want to prioritize economic development, and they see gasoline as the reason economic development can happen.
And many of them, I'm reading here in your reports and others, representing poorer districts.
So that's kind of two sides of the same coin. It's an interesting debate that's happening right now. So you have poor communities with mostly minority residents who suffer disproportionately from pollution. But there also are concerns about rising costs that can come with new regulations. So those lawmakers had to decide which they were more concerned about, the pollution problems or those rising costs.
Here's Jerry Brown responding to that, the governor, saying, look, that's one way of interpreting how the poor get hurt. There are others. Jerry Brown.
The word went out that poor people are better off with unlimited oil consumption than with a clean energy economy. Nothing could be further from the truth. People who are at the lowest end of the economic scale suffer more asthma, more respiratory diseases from oil pollutants. Secondly, jobs in clean energy and energy efficiency will go to more local people in California, not distant countries.
Chris McGurian with the Los Angeles Times. Okay, so cutting gas and diesel use in half over the next 15 years, big, ambitious goal. That's out for the moment, though Jerry Brown says they'll keep on trying. Well, are they going to bring something else in there, or does this mean they're giving up on their 80% cut by 2050?
Well, they're not giving up on anything at this point, and it's kind of a tricky question of who has the power in California. Even though the legislature did not pass the gas reduction part of the bill, the governor still has really, really strong power to push this forward with regulations that already are on the books. So, for example, what I mentioned about changing the formula of gasoline, that's something the state is already doing and will help get the state, you know, a lot of the way towards the 50% goal. So basically, you have a governor, you know, who already has a lot of tools in the toolbox, who's going to keep pushing this forward anyways.
I mean, California is so influential. If they had passed this, it would have presumably also have meant more efficient automobiles, pressure on Detroit to continue to produce that, maybe even clearing a way for other, not just other states, but other countries around the world. We've got the big climate conference coming up in Paris. What California does matters. The Pope just had Jerry Brown over to talk about climate. I think he's headed to Paris.
Right, absolutely. You know, the governor was at the Vatican. The governor is planning to go to Paris. And you can see examples throughout the years that California sets a standard and then the rest of the country follows along. And especially with climate as a global issue, people are watching carefully to see what California does. You know, the fact that they blinked in this situation, as you said earlier, you know, is an issue. And, you know, the governor is going to have to, you know, get out there again and say that the state's not going to be giving up just because this one bill didn't get passed.
Chris McGeering with the Los Angeles Times joining us from Sacramento. Thank you so much for being there, Chris.
Sure. Thank you.
Nate Lewis joins us now from Pasadena, California, Scientific Director of the Department of Energy's Innovation Hub at the California Institute of Technology, Professor of Chemistry at Caltech. Nate Lewis, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So this was a real eye-grabbing goal, 50% cut in gas and oil use in 15 years. Was it doable in the first place, Nate?
Well, technically, there's, I think, little question, and CARB, actually the California Air Resources Board, had several years ago put together a schedule of a lot of little things that can be done, just as Chris said, that cumulatively could have reached this goal technically. So there's little question, I believe, that it could be done through a lot of measures. It's challenging because to do it, we would actually, as the bill reads, have to cut petroleum use in an absolute value by 50%, not per person, but in the state.
Overall.
Overall. As the economy grows, as the population grows, those two things confounded would normally lead to an increase in petroleum demand, and yet the total would have to be cut by 50%, not just through vehicles and driving technology.
I mean, it's such a big number. It was such a big goal until last night and so near to being law. It's a very interesting thought exercise for the whole country, maybe the world, if that's what we need to do. Is it doable and still have economic growth? A lot of Democrats in California said no. Oil lobby said no very, very loudly. They've won for now. Nathan Lewis, please stand by at Caltech. It's great to have you with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about California saying no to a giant cut in oil use, an environmental setback, environmentalists would say, in the midst of a huge effort to push against climate change. Of course, a bunch of Democrats were pushing against this as well, saying our economy just can't take this. But is this what it's going to take to get where California, maybe the world, wants, needs to go? Nathan Lewis is with us, professor of chemistry at Caltech. He's the head of the Department of Energy's Innovation Hub at California Institute of Technology. This bill would have said cut petroleum use by 50%. That's gasoline and diesel in car country, California. California Drivers Alliance, group funded by the auto industry, oil, came out very strong against this with all kinds of ads. Here's one.
This law will limit how often we can drive our own cars. The state will also be collecting and monitoring our personal driving habits and tracking how much gas we use. They're now reviewing regulations to force automakers to include data monitoring systems in all cars so that regulators will be able to penalize and fine us if we drive too much or use too much gas.
It had some effect. Here's Yvonne Noble in July. Talked to USA Today on vacation in California. Said she was leaving California's high gas prices behind.
I don't know how I feel about it. I need gas. It costs what it costs. I've got to put gas in the car, and I'm going back to Virginia where I can afford the gas.
So off she goes. California State Senator Kevin DeLeon, he was right in the heart of this, sponsored the climate change bill. Last night at the press conference where they pulled the plug on this part of it, he said that we reached for something really big.
We reached for something grand and something doable while the world prepared to once again take its cues from California. But in the end, with 2 days left, we could not cut through the multi-million dollar smokescreen created by a single interest group with a singular motive and a bottomless war chest.
That is big oil and maybe the auto industry. Governor Jerry Brown saying, gotta go big here. You have to decarbonize the economy.
This is a big goal. It's a very heroic objective, and it's very real. But it's not something that I made up or Kevin DeLeon made up. What is at stake here is a fundamental turn in the way the modern economy functions. When we decarbonize the economy, we create an economic and environmental revolution.
Nate Lewis at Caltech, I know you're a chemist, but give us a little political analysis here. What do you think was the bigger headwind? Was it Democratic assemblymen who said this is going to be hard for our districts, who are already some of them struggling? Was it the impact of oil industry ads on TV and radio?
I think that in California, one has to recognize the dynamics involved that many people don't realize, that California actually is either the third or the fourth largest oil-producing state in the United States, behind Texas, Alaska, and Louisiana. We're very close. And the dynamics of that are that in certain districts, especially Kern County in the Central Valley, that are very large oil producers still, that there's a lot of political and influences related to jobs in that area and economic considerations that have a proportionate, if not disproportionate, say in the legislature when it comes to protecting the interests of the oil and automobile manufacturer companies.
I mean, in the past, California has been pretty aggressive anyway, in spite of that. They've led in lots of areas here. Do you see this as a hit to momentum for measures to hold back climate change as the Paris meeting is coming and all the rest?
Well, I'm not sure that it actually is as big a hit as has been made out because, as Chris noted, California, through regulatory mechanisms, has many other mechanisms and tools already in place and on the books. We have an executive order, different than a law, but we have an executive order passed and signed by Governor Schwarzenegger that has been reinforced by Governor Brown that says that California is bound to cut CO2 emissions by 80% of 1990 levels by the year 2050. And that then puts into place a regulatory framework that says to meet those goals, we will have to introduce so-called low-carbon fuels. We will have to do a variety of other things as regulated by the California Air Resources Board and other agencies that are trying to meet those deep CO2 emissions cuts. One of the impacts of that will be gasoline. Another will be energy efficiency. Another will be decarbonizing our electricity supply even further. And many other things will have to fall into place. None of those things are changed by the fact that the legislature didn't reinforce an intermediate waypoint of mandating a 50% gasoline cut. But to comply with those other bigger picture things, this is going to have to come soon enough because gasoline and transportation make such a big impact on carbon emissions in our state that if we don't get it under control, we cannot meet those other targets. The arithmetic is just not there.
I mean, maybe it's not doable economically, but these big goals get set out there like 80% by 2050. That's huge and ambitious. But if you're not meeting it along the way, as you say, maybe you just can't get there. Without that stark 50% cut in 15 years in gas and diesel use, is it still doable, your big goal, 80% by 2050?
It's not clear that this prohibits that because of all the regulatory policies, the cap and trade, the low carbon fuel standards, other mechanisms. So it's not clear that this legislative inaction necessarily means that all the other regulations that are going to come into play, unless they are somehow repealed or stopped, will actually prevent this from occurring regardless. But not that notwithstanding, I think it's pretty clear that if you don't have a transition path and try to meet a 2050 goal in 2049, that's technically and politically not going to happen. And it's no good for the atmosphere because the CO2 emissions are cumulative. And so if you wait until 2049 to meet the 2050, you've got those 50 years under your belt in the air that don't go away. And you actually haven't done anything beneficial to make anybody feel good anyway, except meet a legislative or regulatory number.
Yeah, there's the rub. Nate Lewis, please stand by there in Pasadena. Nate Lewis of Caltech with us from Palo Alto in California right now is Jeremy Carl, research fellow at the Hoover Institution, director of research for the Schultz-Stevenson Task Force on Energy Policy, to look at energy and environmental policy. Jeremy Carl, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be with you.
Were you in favor of this plank of the climate legislation that would have required a 50% cut in gas and diesel use by 2030?
I wasn't for lots of reasons, and one of them is that the math simply doesn't work out. And frankly, even the proponents of this sort of hemmed and hawed and kind of did a lot of hand-waving in terms of explaining exactly how we were going to get to this target. I think the kind of notion that this is some sort of conspiracy from big oil, I think if you talk to anybody in the oil industry in this state, they would love to have all the power that has been imputed to them by some of the opponents here.
But people aren't saying conspiracy. It was right out in the open. I mean, it was lots and lots of ads against it. That's not a conspiracy. That's just a campaign.
Sure. But I don't think ultimately that this was driven by oil. I think one of the things that we haven't talked about a lot yet so far, but I think was actually genuinely important, was also the issue of who was going to really be doing this. We don't know because it wasn't really specified within the legislation how we were going to get there. What all the power was being given to was this California Air Resources Board, which is ultimately not particularly accountable to anybody really but the governor at the end of the day politically. The legislature wasn't going to really have a way to vote up or down on various elements of this provision. And so I think really nobody knew what was in this, which also, of course, made it very easy for the oil industry to kind of paint a bunch of worst-case scenarios. But I think it made the sort of better-case scenarios a little bit less plausible to argue for, too, because, you know, honestly, people didn't know what they were voting on.
Here's a little bit from, again, from a spokeswoman for the California Drivers Association, Beth Miller. This was at CBS Los Angeles in mid-August. And saying, suggesting that some of the things that she thought, in the absence of really knowing, that she was asserting that it might require to meet these ambitious goals on oil and gas use reduction.
We know that could mean anything from gas rationing to surcharges on SUVs or minivans. And the people of California deserve to know what is in this bill.
Jeremy Carl, is that what it would have taken to meet this goal, gas rationing, to take away the minivans?
You know, I don't know. I think ultimately what would have happened would have been that one of two things. One, we would have either realized, as we've done with some other environmental initiatives in the past, that it simply wasn't doable, and we would have either backed off it publicly or, as we've sometimes done, unfortunately, pretended we were really hitting the goal but not really done it. The other possibility would have been, I mean, I could certainly have seen surcharges being put on SUVs or other things like that. I think the notion that we were going to ban people from driving in some way, I mean, I think obviously that's pretty fanciful. But, you know, I think there could have been all sorts of things on the table that a lot of voters wouldn't have liked. And I think that in the Central Valley, which is one of the poorest parts of California, which has the highest percentage of people in poverty in the entire country, according to the new Census Bureau measure, this had an effect. It was a real split between the sort of gentry liberals, my neighbors here in Palo Alto for the most part, who are very in favor in a passionate way of some of these issues, and folks who have more pocketbook issues in the Democratic coalition. And I think this is presaging, I think, what may be a split on these issues within that coalition, and it certainly bears watching.
You know, we're talking about this today not because all of our listeners are in California. Many are, but many are not. But everybody's thinking about, well, what do we need to do? And what is it going to take? Nate Lewis and others say a lot of small steps, and you could have met this very, very dramatic goal, 50% cut in gas and diesel use by 2030. A lot of small steps, and it doesn't sound that intimidating, but then you say the math doesn't add up. So which is it, Jeremy?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things, if you look at the platforms that this was allegedly being put on, this notion of kind of low carbon fuels and what we have a low carbon fuel standard in the state that is hugely, hugely problematic at this point.
And that would mean more biofuel
ingredients,
I guess.
Which I think if you talk to most environmentalists, you would get a pretty negative view on. It obviously depends on what biofuel and in what conditions. But when you talk about mass production of biofuels, very unclear there's any benefit other than California hitting a target number for the environment. People are sort of waving that, of course, as one of the main platforms, because the Obama administration reached agreement with U.S. auto companies at a time when some of them were looking at going bankrupt to reach a certain mileage goal, that, of course, that's going to happen. Well, I can tell you, having talked to auto companies and other folks, that it's not really clear just because Obama has issued that executive order that it's absolutely going to happen. I don't think it's impossible. I personally drive a Prius. I think it's great. I've been driving it for 10 years. I saved a lot of money on gas on it. So it's not that I'm against technology innovation or green cars, but it's not really obvious to me that works for everybody, and different drivers are going to have different needs. It's not obvious that it's going to work for all drivers to kind of put in these sorts of new technologies at great expense. And I've got four kids, so we can't fit my whole family in a Prius. So I mean, we have to drive something.
Yeah, I take your point. And yet, you know, we are hearing, I mean, we're seeing all kinds of evidence of records being broken on warming. We're seeing, you know, the fires out there. We're being told that our coasts are going to be flooded and all kinds of misery if we don't do this. I think everyone's just trying to get a gut sense of how big a stretch we need to make to take the steps, if we need to make them, that would actually address it. And if California won't do this one, who will? Jeremy Carl, please stand by. Nate Lewis, both in California. You've got callers from all over the country. I want to begin to bring them in from Miami. Jesus is calling from Miami, Florida. Jesus, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Tom. It's great to be with you. My question to the panelists is, with renewable energy sources about to become cheaper than fossil fuels by the year 2020, isn't this cutting gas use going to be happening anyways in 15 years or maybe even before that?
If the economics
show that people go for cheaper sources of energy, then they'll go for renewable energy.
Let us pick it up, Jesus. I appreciate your call from Miami. Nate Lewis, how about it? By 2020, renewables cheaper than gas and diesel anyway, even with oil down where it is now?
Well, some renewables, such as solar panels in the right economic environments, are now cost competitive, if not cheaper than, say, peak electricity. In other places, it is not that way, but the gap is closing. I think what's more important here is that we not confuse these apples and oranges. The caller was completely technically right in that although California has a low carbon fuel standard, that doesn't necessarily mandate that you have to use biofuels. Electricity from clean sources to power hybrid vehicles and plug-ins counts as well as a low carbon fuel source.
So it's not all
corn ethanol and not necessarily all locked into an existing technology. Now, that could be one role. The low carbon fuel standard, however, is only one policy tool and would not get us to 50%. But that doesn't mean that there aren't other things that could be done, like start-stop vehicles, more hybridization, while keeping our SUVs on the road with lighter weight materials. It's certainly been thought to be the case that that will add cost to the vehicle purchase, but you save money in the gasoline you save, and depending on the gas prices and how far you drive, the people that drive the most could actually financially benefit from this type of environment as opposed to being penalized. This is a very complicated, multidimensional issue, and I think trying to capture it into a one polarizing soundbite on one side or the other really doesn't do justice to the nuances of what's involved in this issue.
We're all for nuance, but people want a sense of what it takes to get where we need to go. I mean, it was put out there that if you really want to do this, and Jeremy's suggesting people just throw numbers out and then don't meet them, and the implications of that could be pretty dire. Would it require? It was suggested rationing gas, even rationing driving, Nate.
I don't think that would come into play for many reasons, and technically, as I said earlier, the California Resources Board has put together, with input from the automakers and from people that make fuels and engines, a schedule of a lot of little things like start-stop, hybridization, and other things that could technically meet this goal that was set out that will still be on the books through regulations anyway to meet the bigger target.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about California saying no to a big mandated cut in gasoline and diesel use. Environmentalists have pushed hard for it. Oil lobby and representatives of poorer parts of California, Central Valley and more, had pushed against, saying the economic costs are too high. It comes as the whole world is gearing up for the Paris Climate Conference, when everyone's trying to figure out just how big a stretch the world is going to have to make to deal with climate change. Interesting to dig into and see how California has thought this through. Nathan Lewis is with us from Caltech. Jeremy Carl is with us from the Hoover Institution and the Schultz-Stevenson Task Force on Energy Policy there. Severin Bornstein joins us in a moment from Berkeley School of Business, the Haas School of Business at California Berkeley. The Senate leader who had really pushed this in California, Kevin De Leon, talked at a press conference just last night where the thing finally fell apart under a lot of pressure. Press conference there. He was there with Governor Jerry Brown. He said that he thought the people of California were largely in favor of the proposal.
The fact that despite overwhelming scientific opinion and statewide public support, we still weren't able to overcome the silly season scare tactics of an outside industry which has repeatedly opposed environmental progress and energy innovation means that there's temporary disconnect in our politics, which needs to be overcome.
Just a temporary disconnect in the politics. We'll see where that goes, but it matters where California goes. It's been a leader on many fronts here. Nate Lewis, Jeremy Carl, please stand by. A lot of callers here. John in Detroit. John, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Well, thanks for a great conversation. So my perspective comes from a father who raised us 40 years at Chrysler in Detroit. The argument is we can't afford to do this. I say we can't afford not to. The cost, if you do a balance sheet on the costs associated with oil, from the oil spills to the wars that we have, the fluctuation in the economy, the argument we use was used 20 years after they knew lead was bad for us. I'm sure it was used with asbestos, and it's time for the consumers to understand that we're going to eat the costs, whatever they are, at the end of the line when the oil is spilled, when the train blows up. We associate all those costs. I laugh when my friends say, oh, Toyota just had a big recall. But when Toyota has a recall, it costs everybody that buys any automobile, and the consumer buys it.
And you're putting the oil suppliers in the category of big tobacco or asbestos back when they were denying and pushing off efforts to rein it in. Jeremy Carl, what about that? That long-term hydrocarbons, petrochemicals, petroleum is a big problem, and let's just bite the bullet. Let's do what it takes to fix it now. John out of Detroit is saying.
Well, I mean, first of all, I think, look, technological innovation is great, and frankly, even government-sponsored basic research and development to improve technological innovation is something that I'm in favor of, and we are seeing technological innovation in the car and light-duty truck in particular area, where we are seeing more ability to electrify and do other things. At the same time, I always kind of laugh at these kind of comparisons between, say, oil and tobacco. And I mean, oil is currently used in all sorts of things everything from clothes you might be wearing to powering vehicles.
We're not talking about going naked. We're talking about gasoline and diesel. You're laughing at it, but a lot of people smoke tobacco too, and we know what the consequences of that were.
Well, I agree, but it's harder to argue that tobacco was something that was necessary for modern life. People driving around and being able to get from A to B is something that I think is pretty necessary.
We've got other ways to drive, don't we? I mean, don't we?
Well, I don't think we have cost-effective ways that can drive. I mean, electric drive, again, I'm optimistic about the future of electric drive, but I think we're a long way from getting to the point where we have a real mass-market, inexpensive electric vehicle without subsidies that can compete with the internal combustion engine. I mean, I think that's the reality. I think we could get there. I think we're seeing exciting developments, but we've got a ways to go. And a lot of people try to pretend that it's just, oh, it's this nefarious oil company and there's all sorts of choices, but we're just being stupid to not take the choice. No, there's hard choices, and we need to balance those, and different people may balance those in different ways. Again, I mean, I drive a pretty fuel-efficient vehicle most of the time.
Yeah, we got that. But we know where oil companies make profit, by selling oil, and so they're going to want to do that. Nate Lewis, here's a listener online. Worried for the Country writes, cutting gas usage in half implies many more electric cars. This, in turn, implies more electric use. Most folks charge at night. No solar. It says, where will this extra power come from? We know it isn't nuclear. Natural gas. You heard questions Jeremy Carl raises about low-carbon fuel. What about it, Nate?
This is an excellent point. I'd like to also try to remind people that this bill has still two remaining other prongs that are significant. One is this cut, the increase in energy efficiency in homes by a factor of two, but equally importantly, it ups the mandate of renewable energy made into electricity at the retail level to 50% of total electricity must come from renewables by 2030 in the state of California. In order to do that, we're going to have to bring on a lot more geothermal, wind, and solar, but we're also going to have to find a way to store that energy when the wind isn't blowing and when the sun isn't shining in order to be able to do things like recharge our electric vehicles and do the other things that we need to do with renewable energy if we're going to meet that part of the target. Now, that being said, we need to also understand that electric drivetrains are not fantasy. They are here now. Mm-hmm. They are in the number one selling car in the state of California, which is a Prius. So we have that technology, and I think it's inevitable because it's so much more efficient to run a car with an electric motor than with an internal combustion engine that is going to promulgate technologically through the fleet. The question is whether or not we're going to be able to fuel our vehicles with electricity stored on board in batteries or with fuel cells or with other low-carbon substitutes for drop-in crude-based hydrocarbons that we use now. That's where the technological slate is open for innovation. I think there's little doubt that we will have electric drivetrains because they're here now and that train has left the station.
As long as your electricity is clean enough and you can manipulate and store and have it transportable enough that it works for all that. Nate Lewis, Jeremy Carl, please stand by in California. From Berkeley, California now, Severin Borenstein joins us, professor business administration at the Haas School of Business at the University of California, Berkeley. Also a research associate at the Haas School's Energy Institute. He's chair of the Petroleum Market Advisory Committee to the California Energy Commission. Severin Borenstein, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Tom.
You thought this big cut in gas and diesel use over 15 years, cutting by half, was a bad idea. Why?
Well, I think, first of all, it was a goal that was very unlikely to be met. The Air Resources Board has put out a document on the little ways in which it might be met. It's a very vague document and does a lot of double counting and really didn't add up to the sort of cut. But I think more importantly, this is just not the right goal to be going after. There are many ways we could reduce petroleum usage that wouldn't actually address climate change. For instance, by massively ramping up natural gas vehicles, which would have a slight reduction in greenhouse gases, but not much. Or by emphasizing corn ethanol, which also has only a slight reduction in greenhouse gases and has many other environmental problems. So I think writing legislation to reduce petroleum and acting as if that would solve the problem is really missing the point. We need to go after greenhouse gas reductions, and that means we need legislation that will really push the new technologies, not just sort of the short-run substitutes that might get you to this goal, without actually moving us closer to climate change, to really addressing climate change.
But here's the thing, Severin. You've got a lot of people. You've got people out there who just deny the whole thing. Okay, we'll grant that. You got a lot of other people who are really worried about this and sort of want to do all of the above. Like, you know, you're going to have more efficient buildings. You're going to have more efficient energy sources. But this piece, oil, just got dropped as a formal goal in this legislation. And people wonder if we're just setting up these ambitious targets, but we won't actually meet them, and by the time we realize that, we're fried.
Well, I think that that's a real concern, but I don't think this legislation really went after it, because this legislation would have allowed us to feel good about ourselves by reducing petroleum consumption, but potentially doing it in ways that actually didn't reduce greenhouse gases. So I think we need to focus the legislation on California reducing its greenhouse gases directly by saying we're going to have a goal for greenhouse gas reduction, and that means we will end up reducing petroleum, as Nate earlier said, but we won't do it by just substituting to other sources that may reduce petroleum but would actually not address the greenhouse gas problem. And I think there's a bigger issue here, mm-hmm. which we have to recognize, which is California is only 1% of world greenhouse gas emissions. And what we need to do in California and in the United States is recognize that most of the growth, or all, the vast majority of the growth, in greenhouse gases is going to come from the developing world. We need to think about technologies and progress in California and the U.S. that are exportable to India and China and other parts of the developing world. If we just get there through using expensive technologies or little fixes in our country that really don't work in the developing world, we're not really going to solve the problem. We need to be focused on developing the new technologies that can potentially be cost competitive in the developing world. And that means really focusing on the new technologies, the breakthrough technologies, not these incremental steps that, in this case, might not even reduce greenhouse gases, such as substituting to natural gas vehicles or corn ethanol.
That's a very interesting point. Janice in North Charleston, South Carolina. Janice, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
So I've been running trials in California for the last 5 years with a low-carbon feedstock. It'll be about a fifth of the greenhouse gas for corn ethanol, which is currently they have 5 corn ethanol plants in California.
Okay.
They've got the biggest dairy cattle industry in the country. They could replace all their alfalfa with the vines from these type of energy sweet potatoes. You can't get any money from the state of California because they're spending hundreds of millions of dollars on hydrogen fueling stations and all kind of artificial trees and all kind of stupid things. Henry Ford invented the internal combustion engine to run on fuel ethanol. Every car in America could, for $150, be a flexible fuel vehicle. Why won't California put some of their California Energy Commission money in this instead of all, you know, artificial trees and...
Janice, what are you getting from cows that will run cars in California? I didn't quite catch that.
Fuel ethanol. In other words, instead of using corn, they have 4-5 corn ethanol plants in California.
Yeah.
Because they need them for clean air. Convert to crops that grow in California with little water, high yield, little nitrogen.
So biofuel, but not corn-based, you're saying?
Correct. But they are funding that. They're funding hydrogen fuel stations and exotic batteries and things that are, you know, pie in the sky instead of doing with what technology we have right now.
Let us pick it up. Nate Lewis, what about Janice's complaint out of South Carolina, which she knows California well, it sounds like.
Sounds like she does know California well. Severin really touched on the issue here in a direct way, that what we need to do is be technology agnostic and not worry about the favorite today or tomorrow. Let the marketplace figure this out and under normal competitive pressures. Don't pick winners and don't pick losers. But keep your eye on the goal, and the goal is, according to this executive order that's on the books, is to lower carbon emissions in the state by this 80% number from 1990. And technologies that can let us do that should compete in the marketplace on a fair footing, regardless of whether it's renewables powering our vehicles indirectly or corn ethanol or biofuels on a fair footing, on a full life cycle counting basis.
Yeah.
And the cheapest technology is then going to win, and that's the way it should be.
But they're still out there competing with oil, which is awfully cheap right now.
Well, that is because we don't have a carbon price or some mechanism to price the costs of the CO2 that is emitted, and so we have an economic market failure gap. And as long as we don't value CO2 emitted into the air, then it's not going to be the case that we're going to have a fair playing field, and we either fix that or have to dance around it with these other regulatory tools.
Jeremy Carl, the 80% reduction in greenhouse gases by 2050, that is the Schwarzenegger and Jerry Brown goal for California. Do you believe California can and will make it?
I'm not sure whether they'll make it, but I don't take particularly seriously any sorts of promises that politicians are making long after their terms or, frankly, long after their lives are over. But I would like to
but
generally...
But, for criminy, I mean, isn't this really important, Jeremy?
I think it depends. It obviously depends on how serious a problem for humans, you think, A, climate changes, and B, how much, associating myself very much with Severin's comments, what we do in California is going to affect things, whether, and I've lived in India, versus what we're going to do in India and what's going to be applicable there, which is something I have some familiarity with, or China. So I think there's that. And I think you can't ignore the political overlay here. And again, to associate to Severin and to some extent Nate has kind of touched on this, but some of the other elements of this bill, you kind of wonder, well, is this really about carbon or is it about something else? We've got this 50% renewable standard, but it excludes large hydropower and it excludes nuclear from that, both of which are zero carbon electricity. Now, are we really concerned about carbon, or are we concerned about things that are sort of appealing to Greens?
A certain view. Severin, I've just got half a minute here. Can California make it? Will it?
I think California is going to make a lot of progress. I hope we will become more focused on doing that through the technology. The real question is, will the world make it? And
yeah.
Will we develop the technology for the world, and particularly the developing world, and the people who are coming out of poverty and want transportation and want air conditioning and want those things, to do that in a way that that doesn't blow up the greenhouse gas emissions.
Yep.
And I think that's where we need real breakthrough technologies and where we need to focus.
1% of CO2 emissions out of California, but it's been a big leader, a hiccup in that last night. We'll see where it all goes. Severin Bornstein at Berkeley, thank you for being with us today. Nate Lewis at Caltech, Jeremy Carl at the Hoover Institution at Stanford. Thanks to all three of you and listeners for all your input here and online at onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.